extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, presented by AT&T 5G. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Charlie Davies, David Goss. It's a beautiful Thursday. We got a big show for you. Victor Wanyama will join us in just a little bit. We're talking you through the biggest playoff implications from week 27. We got some good mail. We'll scatter that throughout. But we have a big tidbit this morning, Charlie Davies. Meg Linehan tweeting, one big tidbit on the USMNT side for y'all. U.S. Soccer will reveal the World Cup roster at an event in New York City on November 9th. Circle the date on your calendars, folks. That is the day we will all descend on Twitter and likely yell at each other for a long period of time, both excited and terrified about the prospects to come in Qatar.
Shout out to my friend. Meg Linehan dropping the big news.
This is a New England club here, Charlie and Meg.
It is a New England club here. Okay. Yeah, I'm hyped. I don't anticipate too many new names being on that roster, but I could see a few surprises, and that is based on form versus a player who maybe got an injury or has dipped in form and hasn't been playing. So I'm excited. Let's go. November 9th. Let's hurry up. Hurry up.
Charlie, were you doing anything last night, by the way? His voice is quite gravelly, Dave. I don't know if you noticed that.
It's that Cape Cod. He's just being zen.
Yeah, It just calms you down. Really gives you a nice equilibrium to everything about your life.
It really does. New England, what do you want?
The USMNT roster release for the 2014 World Cup was one of the worst moments, events, days, whatever I've ever experienced. So I am glad to know in advance when that will be. If you remember, Jurgen Klinsmann just dropped it out of nowhere. Dropped Landon Donovan, of course, at like 8 p.m. Eastern time on a Thursday night with no warning. And not, I don't even think they did it on a platform. Like it wasn't on ESPN or anything like that. We had to re-record our show that night. I was supposed to go on a family trip and we had to stay and re-record our show because it was clearly irrelevant that day. And they also cut Landon Donovan, which didn't work out super well. So, I'm excited to know when this is coming and what it will
be.
It
seems like a learning experience for all, let's say, as to what maybe a better way of going about this might be. If you were going to plan this event, Dave, and I know that you know your significant other soon to be lawfully wedded wife is an expert in this field. What would the event look like? I need to know. NYC guy.
Yeah, no, I'd probably do it in the overpass under the F train that leads to that field that people play Bowery Premier League on the Lower East Side. I would light it up and I would go full on old school NBA intros for every single player. Next. Roster spot number 13 from the Philadelphia Union Academy at 5'10". Is Brendan Aaronson even 5'10"?
Yeah, I don't know.
The
American Badger, Brendan Aaronson. Yeah. You had to have that like.
I go full.
We need like a mic that hangs from the, from some sort of ceiling a la a boxing ring. And we need to invite all of the Twitter sphere. For all the reactions, we need boos, we need oohs, we need ahs. Also, Anders says in the chat that maybe we invite the bubble guys. Like, I don't want like a super draft or like first round draft situation where we have guys sitting in chairs for far too long.
Well, in reality, MLS couple have happened. So every MLS person will be available to be there, right?
Yeah. Do we get a smoke machine? Do we have them run out of a tunnel? Do we have warm-ups like those rip-off, like, the button warm-ups? They could just like rip them off. Like, oh, okay, yeah, here we go. Got to jog around,
The thing is, most guys will be in camp, so it's not like.
Well, where's the camp?
Could be in New York.
Bubble camp.
Yeah.
I'm sure they'll join the show.
All right, let's get into a big show coming today from the AT&T 5G virtual studios. As I said, Victor Wanyama will join us in a second. His midfield partner, the number 10 in front of him, Georgi Mihailovic. It is official. We talked about this. AZ Alkmaar is his destination. The price tag is pretty darn significant. It is the dream that he had to go to Europe. He had a press conference today and basically said, I will always have a fond spot in my heart for Montreal. They helped me level up 2 to 3 levels. And for Montreal, they hold on to him. We'll talk to Victor about what that means for the rest of the season and what he sees for Georgi's future, as well as his time in MLS. He's had a longer time than I think some people imagined, almost the longest stop of his entire career. So we'll talk through that one. We got some mail, and we're going to obviously talk about week 27. We'll start with the biggest playoff implications this weekend. Two really good national TV games, both on Friday night, and then also Hell is Real. So you could have a choice of a lot of things here. If you go to the top of the Western Conference, like Supporters Shield implications, Austin starts off the weekend, 8 p.m. Eastern against LAFC at Q2 on ESPN. Then right after that on ESPN, doubleheader for you, Portland, Seattle, and then you got Hell is Real on Saturday. That one's on MLS Live on ESPN Plus, but it's a class game on that platform at 7:30. Dave, what is your biggest playoff implications game, biggest hype? What are you most excited about?
I don't think it's an exaggeration to say if there is a winner in the Portland-Seattle game, the loser might be done for the season. If it's a draw and they're both able to stay close, okay. But right now, there's two things you're looking at if you're a team in a playoff race. Points and the amount of teams you have to jump. Because at some point, you got to get over the ones in front of you. And we keep saying we think it'll be 45 points, 47 points, 46 points. It doesn't matter. It's the reality of the teams around you. If Seattle goes to Portland, picks up 3 points, they move ahead of them by 4 points or 3 points in the standings. They'll probably jump into a playoff spot by the end of the weekend. All those things. Same for Portland, coming off two massive losses, including one to SKC last weekend on national TV. If they beat Seattle at home, they move back into a playoff spot. It puts you in the driver's seat. I think the loser might be already done with still 7 or 8 games to play.
I think the thing what you said about jumping teams is important. And you mentioned sort of there, okay, well, if one of them wins, they're likely in the playoffs. Well, that's all, like, result-dependent. You know, you have Nashville, Galaxy, Vancouver all in front of you right now. If any of those...
Nashville play Vancouver
right.
This weekend,
let's say two of those three teams win, because obviously Nashville and Vancouver can't both win. You're not in the playoffs if you win.
Yeah, the LA Galaxy have to fly to New England and play the Revs. I do not believe two of those teams
okay,
win.
Okay, I've seen crazier
Galaxy
things.
Have to go... to the Revs, sure. And then to Toronto. That is a tough road trip.
Yeah. And again, to your point, you cannot give up an opportunity to jump teams. You cannot see the Galaxy lose on Sunday and not have jumped ahead of them if you are Portland and Seattle, and then have the Galaxy going to Toronto and not be in the driver's seat where they have the pressure and they're chasing you. That is part of the reason why this is so huge. And then let's put in the emotional side, right? You can't take that out. It's Cascadia Cup. It is as big a game as they've played now in a while because of the importance for both their teams. And they're both coming off really weird periods. I think the Roldan injury has been huge this week. Failing to close out against the Galaxy last week. Seattle is in a precarious situation. And for Portland, 11 unbeaten, and then to go and just get waxed off the field in Toronto and then go down and not put together a competitive showing in KC, they are in a spot where if they don't perform against their rival in this game, you really have to wonder where the confidence would come from to make a playoff.
We talked to Ryan Clark, who's the Oregonian beat writer on the Power Rankings show on Tuesday. Doyle and I, you can listen to that on MLS Today podcast feed as well as MLS Today, obviously. That's been a great show this week. I believe you're getting Gianluca Busio tomorrow, Dave. Is that the case?
For next week.
Okay,
yeah.
Well.
And we're going to have an awesome player on to preview.
Oh, see, there you go. Subscribe. MLS Today, the podcast feed. But basically, Ryan Clark and Chris Reifer, who I think a lot of people around the MLS sphere and certainly in Portland, they know, they're sort of on this, they're sort of banging the drum that, like, this is it. If they don't do it at home against Seattle, and there's a track record here of the away team winning in Cascadia over the last, what, 5-6 years, they're both saying this is done, and they got a better read on this than I do. Like, I'm way across the country. The Timbers haven't occupied my every thought for the course of this season, as many Timbers supporters would agree, I'm sure, as they have on Twitter and in the mailbag before. But it seems sort of crazy to me to say that, but we're starting to get to that part of the year where, like, if you can't put it together now and you can't win pressure games now or meet sort of the moment, what sign is there that you're going to meet the moment? And when I look at Seattle, I thought Jeremiah Oshan put together some really good stats on his side. for Seattle, I really do think it just basically comes down to like Rui Diaz and Morris. Their production from their elite attacking players this year has been significantly below what you'd expect. And there's a lot of factors to that. And injuries are obviously a big one. But they're now going to have to do that without sort of like chance creation hub Christian Roldan, who's now out for 4 to 6 weeks, which we haven't talked about, but sort of just like snuck into the Twitter news cycle and didn't get as much run as we wanted to. I mean, Charlie, that's not just for the Sounders. That's for a World Cup roster. There's big implications there. But like to get over this hump for Seattle in a position they might be used to having to like really turn it on late in the year, but to do it without Roldan, that's a different challenge entirely.
It is. And I feel bad for Roldan because he's one of those guys that's flirting with the last two spots in the 26 man roster for the U.S. Men's National Team. And I think this injury might have pushed him out because now that 26 spot is so much more valuable, especially when you're looking at the U.S. Men's National Team. Yeah, you want a player who's flexible, who can play a bunch of different positions, who isn't going to bring the group down. No, brings it every day in training. Great a teammate, someone who has the right mentality. That's Christian Roldan. But considering that, man, we can bring a player who maybe hasn't been involved that much in the group, who's coming in hot, who's in form. Now, I think that unfortunate injury kind of takes him out of the picture.
I understand what you're saying, Charlie. The one thing in his favor is, if we're being honest, he's not really being brought to play, right? He is that last roster spot. He is a Swiss Army knife, but he is a locker room guy. He is a culture guy for this team, right? He hasn't even played in World Cup qualifying behind guys who are not part of the roster, right? Guys have been brought in, played, and then taken back out of the team in the time that Roldan still has been called up to every roster spot. And then you add in Sebastian Legette sort of taking a step back and probably won't be a part of the roster as well. So of course he'd always want to be playing and you'd want him to be playing. There is a space though where if he's healthy, he still has a chance to make it because the role he plays in the team is not, well, what did you do last week on the field for Seattle? And while I agree with you about some of these hot guys, we're talking 26 roster spots. Are they really even going to play?
Yeah,
and that's where that debate sort of comes into it.
I disagree in the sense that now the 26 players that you bring, maybe you could play. Like the expectation is no longer, oh, if you're 23, 24, 25, 26, you're not playing at all. You are not playing. You are only playing if there's an injury, or you're only playing if, you know, we've already qualified and I want to rest some guys. I think now 23, 24, 25, 26 could be used if you want to change tactics completely in a match. And so the expectations are you can play. You might be playing. We might need to count on you. And that could be a player like Jordan Pefok, who's scoring goals in Bundesliga. It could be a Georgi Mihailovic, who hasn't been in the picture, but comes in hot and he continues to keep forming. Montreal gets in the playoffs, has a deep run. Now he's in the 26. So it goes from you're not going to play to actually we want everyone who's going to be coming into this camp, who's in form and who's fit. And unfortunately, Christian Roldan will not be one of those guys with this injury.
So I'm looking at the World Cup in 2014, and then I'm looking at the schedule in this World Cup. And one of the big sort of storylines that I don't think is being talked about quite as much as it should be in terms of what you're talking about, Charlie, which is how do you utilize 26 men? You know, how will the climate play a role in Qatar? We're not completely sure about that, obviously, at this point. But it seems to me, and I'm just looking at the dates here, there's a big difference in like the breaks between games. So the U.S. had 6 days between Ghana and Portugal, and then it was just 4 days until Germany. And then about, I think it looks like 5 or 6 until Belgium. The U.S. has 4 days until they play England, between Wales and England. Then they have another 4 days, just 4, between England and Iran. You're talking about, in that sense, a difference in 2 days of recovery, which is pretty significant. And then we don't know how sort of the climate aspect of this is going to affect. Now, there is much less travel. That part we have to be clear about. Like, I remember in Brazil, I mean, you were talking long flights literally everywhere to every city that you went to. It was a half day journey. That's not going to be the case in Qatar.
Also after a full season.
And this is going to be, you know, for MLS players, a full season, but a half season for European players. So I think that's one of those sort of under the radar themes of this World Cup, is just how does recovery time affect how you choose players. And can you afford, even though I get what you're saying, Dave, because like what, Mix Discrude didn't play a minute in that World Cup and he was spot number 23. You know, it may be that player doesn't play, but then like Christian's going to miss that September camp. And that's a, like, not a make or break for him. His case has already been made if you know, but he's injured now. So he doesn't have that opportunity to come back and show them that he's ready to go. He's fit. He could contribute if it comes to that, because it might come to that. I don't know. It's sort of heartbreaking for Christian Roldan, to be honest.
Yeah, it sucks. It's brutal. And I said it with Susanna on our show today. He is, to me, one of the poster childs of the sport in this country, of just the opportunity it can give you, the ebbs and flows of it, his passion and desire for it, the way he was raised in it. And so he, I think, is as special a person to make a World Cup roster as there is. I would add, though, on that, on the rest thing, remember Mexico, Panama, and Costa Rica, three straight games in the end of qualifying, and Greg Berhalter pretty much played the same team when he could the entire time. It's a young group. It's a group that he's trying to solidify. So yeah, I would throw that in. I think that's completely fair.
What about the Sounders side? Dave, do you have any thoughts on how this affects their ability to make this run? Because this is not, it's just not ideal.
Yeah, and for him, he, as much as he would be, he needs them to make the playoffs, and he needs to put a playoff run in, because every single time will be an extra game that he can play. It does, and we saw it against the Galaxy, it does feel like it'll move them into that back five, which puts Nuhutolo in a more comfortable spot, but they don't have Brad Smith, who was such a huge factor last year. It would be interesting to see if Leo Chu can get a role as that left wing back to try and bring a little bit more to the attack. I don't hate the idea of Jordan Morris playing centrally for the rest of the season alongside Rui Diaz, and just, yeah, be goal dangerous. He looks efficient. He looks confident right now. It takes away depth for them, and it takes away versatility. I would say with the best 11 they can put out there, if Rui Diaz is healthy for the rest of the stretch, it feels like enough for the Sounders to still make the
on the Portland side. I thought it was interesting what Ryan was saying on power rankings, which is sort of like Gio is not individually questioning effort in the case that he's not, like, you know, if I was Gio, I'd be like, Charlie, you're not giving enough to extra time these days. Like, I'm saying it publicly, man. We need more from you. You should have drank some hot tea, like with some honey in it before the show. Like the state.
Charlie's just trying not to wake up.
The state
up
of your voice is not what we need it to be. You know, like, Gio's not saying that about his team, but he is sort of saying in broad terms, like the effort, the urgency, the commitment is not there. Now, if Sebastian Blanco can get in form, if he can somehow get Nishkoda in form, maybe they can make this jump, but it just feels like the balance is not there for this team right now, both on the defensive side and the attacking side, and that may hurt them in the long run. Let's keep going on biggest playoff implications this weekend, though. I'm not going to take Austin LAFC, and we talk about those teams so much. We'll get to that in a second. Charlie, what do you got?
Well, one, I love Gasa's pick. It's a massive match for Portland. I feel like if they lose this one, they will be out, because they're at Orlando. They still have Houston, they still have Austin, at Vancouver, Cincy, at SKC, even though SKC is not great. It's still a difficult game. At Austin, Atlanta, Minnesota, at the Crew, LAFC, and at RSL. That is a really difficult schedule for Portland. I don't see them... if they lose this game, I don't see them making the playoffs. But my choice is going to be Hell is Real. Mm. Give me that. Cincinnati nice. Hosting the Columbus Crew. I feel that if Cincinnati lose this game, it's not going to look good.
Half of Portland's gravestone chiseled, it seems like, right now. Are you halfway through chiseling Cincinnati's and just waiting to see if they drop this one at home?
No. I mean... it's a very difficult schedule in the way that Charlotte is competing for a playoff spot. They are, and I don't think they get in either. And so they're at 32 points. They play them following the Crew, but then they're at New York City FC. They have San Jose, who's still trying to figure it out. RSL, who's desperate too, and they have a really difficult schedule. So that's a game that RSL needs to get a result. At Seattle. And then they're home to Chicago and then they're at DC. So it's not impossible for Cincy to lose this game and get in, but I think it's really important that they get a result in this match. They cannot afford to lose this game, because TFC is going to be coming in hot. I think the Revs still have a shot to get in. Orlando is going to drop off. I think that they have a really difficult schedule, and I don't think they're that great. They don't really have a goal scorer, so I think they're going to drop off. So this match is huge for Cincinnati.
Do you believe it?
Yeah. As well as the crew.
This just occurred to me, and maybe it's inappropriate. Do you believe in hell? Is hell real?
You know what? I was not a big fan of this. I was like this is kind of whack. But actually going to Cincinnati and then going to Columbus and seeing both the fan bases, the new stadiums, I'm bought in. I am bought in. Cincinnati's stadium is fantastic. It is incredible. Same with the crew, but Cincinnati, I'm like, man, I am bought into the fan base, the culture there, the mentality, the stadium. Everybody was like friendly, and I like their team. I like the way they play. And I think they could, I think with Matt Miazga, that's a huge upgrade in the back line, considering where they were. They needed that piece to really compete for the Eastern Conference.
Let me ask you this, both of you. Mm-hmm. Would you, on your team, Lucho or Zellerayan?
Lucho or Zellerayan? You know what? That's a good one.
Lucho
or Zellerayan?
God, I don't know, man.
Anders, I'm like, age in the chat.
I have no idea because like part of me is like, okay, well,
part of me is a no-brainer. Yeah, agreed. Zellerayan. But then,
yeah,
I'm like,
I think that's the first instinct.
Yeah, the first instinct is no-brainer Zellerayan. But then you like when he does get on the ball, Lucho is pretty special. If when he's motivated and he, mm-hmm. because I think he's very moody as a number 10.
He's
in a great mood. Always getting on the ball, is connecting passes, and he can dribble, he can score. But when he's not in a good mood, he doesn't defend, he's super lazy, doesn't get involved, doesn't work for the team. And I think Zellerayan...
You're talking about Zellerayan or Lucho?
I mean, both of them, but I think Lucho is higher.
It kind of depends on how your team is built. And I think the cool thing about this game is that, and rightfully so, like you don't get Zellerayan and then build a team that would be best for Lucho and vice versa, right? Is that both teams sort of feel... like they're built around that sort of player and maximizing their abilities. Like, I don't know that Zellerayan with two forwards running in front of him and sort of occupying the space that maybe he likes to get into himself is the best mix. Whereas Lucho, it is, because you know he wants to receive the ball in midfield and get on the half turn and face up and have multiple runners in front of him, including those outside backs and the forwards. That's what he has. And he's been crazy, crazy, crazy productive doing it this year. I mean, like, his chance creation numbers are absolutely top in the league. What's crazy though, Charlie, is I compared him to Carlos Hill last year, and Carlos Hill in 2021 like blows that out of the water. That's how good he was. But so it's built the right.
Carlos Hill's competitive with him this year, and he's not.
I know,
even
and
as
he doesn't have anybody around him.
Year.
Carlos Hill is a genius. That's what we're trying to say here. And Lucho's pretty close to him as well. Whereas Zellerayan's more of like in that goal scoring mode, like finding him in pockets to drive at goal himself. Yeah.
Like Triusi.
So the nice thing is that both are in teams that have rightfully so built around them. It's funny, Charlie, you took Is Hell Real a different way than I was intending it. I liked it too.
And I liked
I don't
it,
personally
way,
believe in
it.
The afterlife. Oh, I hope that doesn't bite me in the future. Weeby. But here we are.
I'll be going with the actual derby.
Charlie was avoiding theology.
I'll be laying in the cold hard ground someday, probably wearing an MLS crest over my heart or something like that. Here's a question from Kyle Muir. Cucho nailed on for newcomer of the year? Doyle had Cucho as the newcomer of the year in his recent column. Do we think this is just straight up Cucho's? Like, one of the biggest reasons to watch this game is the forward play. Brenner and Vasquez are two of the absolute best in the league this year, and if you're saying Brenner, like, watch this dude play, he is absolutely incredible. And obviously Cucho has, you know, as we said on the last show, and as you know some of us have said for a long time, has like 2017 prime Joseph potential in him. Is he bang on? Like, he's got to be the dude, or is there somebody else who can challenge him?
Well, you didn't even name anybody else.
Oh, that's your job. I'm throwing it at you.
It's really not out there, the people. Most of the players came last summer, right? Came late. And so they're, I mean, you're talking about Mikel Uhr. Like, there's
and
not.
It's a no.
Yeah. So, there's not obvious players that are
which is,
defender
that's
of
my
the year.
That's my point.
Yeah. Nwaboto's been great. No, it's not going to be a D-mid. Kubas has been great. It's not going to be a D-mid. And there's no really obvious
Taxi Fountas. Taxi Fountas Petrovich could be, but they're just, you know, DC's just so mired in misery.
And there's a pretty good chance Cucho ends the year on more goals than Taxi anyway. Georgi Petrovic is one, but again, not enough time, and a goalkeeper is not going to win it over a goal scorer.
So yes, I think he is the right way.
That's fair enough. Fair enough. All right, I'll hit my games. Anything else you guys have from this one? Anything, Dave, that you're feeling or thinking about? Brandon Vasquez, by the way, announced his new deal this morning with Cincinnati. We've talked about that a bunch, but smart business for everybody involved, it seems.
I would say this is obviously one of those contrasting styles matchups as well. So who does it fall for? And I think we're still going to figure out where Miazga fits in, and not is he a starter, but who are the pieces around him? That's the question mark for FC Cincinnati.
Do we know where Vasquez's contract falls within the roster?
It's not a DP, obviously. It's Tam. I would be guessing Tam in some sense. I think we talked about, like, off the players' union numbers, he was making like 300 or so.
He's making 300.
So you would think that
this has got to be at least.
Yeah, I was gonna say you would think that at least like a 200% raise is in line there, especially given, you know, what the long term strategy there has to be. And he said on our show, and it's no surprise, he said to you as well, like, I know where I want to go.
I do wonder if it is close to the Cannon deal where it's a heavy escalator with the push to sell, right? Like, you're going to give him the raise now because he's earned it. But I wonder how much of it is backloaded, where the concept is, if you don't sell me, I'm making $1.2 million here. If you do sell me, that's probably what he wants at that time in his career.
There's probably a World Cup incentive there, too.
Could be. Yeah. There's a World Cup incentive for Cincinnati on the selling side as well. You got to say that would be quite helpful for any future transfer fee case they might make to other clubs and to his profile as well. Okay, so you got FC Cincinnati Columbus again. That's Saturday, 7:30 p.m. Eastern, MLS Live on ESPN Plus, and we have the doubleheader on ESPN.
How do we feel about that?
Cincinnati's like one of the stadiums. If I have a top three of cities and stadiums that I want to go to see games at, and I know that sort of the March thing has become a running joke over the years at this point, but I just want to go see that stadium.
I wasn't going
to. I'm always hungry and like sort of desperate to be in the new buildings in MLS and to just sort of feel that both the past that sort of ruminates through them of what we didn't have and now what we have, but also the present and the future. So that's among the many I would like to go to. I haven't been to Columbus's new stadium either. I mean, post-COVID, I got to start checking some of these off the list. I want Cincinnati to make the...
You can bike to Columbus's stadium.
Could you scooter? I know you're more of a scooter guy.
I love an electric scooter, and yes, the answer is
yes.
I assumed as much.
Here are my games from week 27. Biggest playoff implications. Given it's my choices, we're making a. I don't know if two is a list or if it qualifies. You guys can chime in on that one. I got Revs Galaxy taking the Revs off Charlie's plate for once. Sunday, 8 p.m. Eastern, MLS Live on ESPN Plus. Look, Galaxy are right above the line, and Charlie, you mentioned that they got a really tough trip coming here, and they're sort of up and down, up and down, up and down. If they can get a win on the road, that's going to be a huge boon for them. And the Revs just need to get points, and they darn certain got to get points at home. Let's take this opportunity to talk Uruguay national team defender Martin Caceres, who's in for the Galaxy, it seems, through the end of the season with an option for 2023. He needed a place to prep before going to the World Cup with Uruguay, and he chose, surprise, surprise, he chose to do it in Los Angeles. Like, it seems like people like Southern California. Galaxy had to trade a $50,000 for an international slot. How much does this matter? How much does it help the Galaxy?
It helps a whole lot, because how many times have we said the back line for the Galaxy is absolute rubbish? And so now you're getting a full international for Uruguay, who's preparing for World Cup, so you know he has to be fit and he has to be sharp. He's going to take this serious. And on top of that, he can play left center back or he can play left back. This is a big-time player. This is a player with a lot of experience. We've seen what Chiellini does for LAFC, and obviously we knew coming into it he was not going to be able to play consistently week to week. Martin Caceres, the expectation is. So I think for Galaxy, this is a great move, and there's no commitment after this year, which is even better for them. They're not locked into some long-term deal. This is really a, hey, come here, perform, help us get into the playoffs, and then we'll set you up for a World Cup. And maybe, who knows, after that we can talk about prolonging a contract or an extension. But I think for them, they needed help defensively. This will be a big help for them.
Well, they actually got the option for next year. Yeah, yeah. So the number's already locked in. So if he plays well and plays at the World Cup, the Galaxy are already set, which is huge for them. And obviously not being locked into a permanent deal is big. I don't know if he's the guy. And I don't say that in a question on him. He started in La Liga for half the year last year. He started in Serie A. He's obviously been a legend when playing over the last 15 years.
I can promise you that.
It cannot be worse. 100%. At this point, with the roster freeze, or sorry, with the window closing, this was the best move they could make. I don't know if it will work, but there was nothing else they could do. It does open up the idea of, well, if the Galaxy ID'd this as a need, why didn't they deal with it when the window was open with someone else? That is a question that will be asked of them, and we've been asking it for a while. The other thing I'd throw in is, if he plays well or plays fine, it also opens up a possibility of playing that five in the back, which we've talked about a lot. And the biggest drawback has been, well, who are the three center backs? So if he is the fit that can sort of bring that, now you've got the two forwards up top. You've got both of your wing backs who are probably truly wing backs in Araujo and Edwards. And now you probably have a formation that fits Pooch well to have players around that he can create for, play into gaps, things like that. So if that's the end game of how this works out, it could be great. But I've said this three times today. Giancarlo Gonzalez, Derek Williams, every time they've tried to, we're roster strapped, we're cast strapped, we're international roster spot strapped. Here's one player that we can find, the only person who fits.
Well, that's why you said, like, why wouldn't they just address it in a long-term sense in the summer? I think that's kind of like the case in point of why they wouldn't. Like, you got to let this season go and then see how your contracts shake out for 2023. And by doing it with Casares this way, you don't have, as you said, a long-term commitment. You've got a little bit of a runway to see. And if it works, it works. And if it doesn't, it doesn't. But you're not committed long-term. Salary cap-wise, I got to imagine it's a little messy for them right now. And maybe this offseason, maybe options and everything else, they can clean it up.
Breaking news.
He likes Southern California. Who doesn't? Who doesn't like Southern California? I didn't say this, I don't think, but congratulations to Matt Polster on the extension in New England as well. He's been a really important piece in the midfield for them since he arrived. Let's talk. Also, Charlotte, Toronto FC is my other one. Just got to throw it out there. Two teams below the line in the East. Charlotte at home. They don't win on the road. They got to win their home games. And Toronto FC are just like, if they lose more than one game the rest of the way, they're done. They basically got to like win 5 out of 6, I want to say. I think that's how many they have left. So this is sort of last chance saloon sort of stuff. Yeah, for both these teams. Seven left.
At Charlotte, Galaxy, Montreal, also, at Atlanta, at Orlando, yeah, Miami.
Charlie's on that form guide like it's his job right
now. Also, TFC put a 5 spot. Yeah, TFC put a 5 spot on Charlotte at home like 3 weeks ago. So the difference there has to be still enough for them to get that result. Otherwise, yeah, as Charlie said, he'll rather.
Extensions also for Andre Shinashiki and Brant Bronico. New contracts there. Shinashiki, 5 goals and assists in like 700-ish minutes since arriving via trade. And then Bronico's been one of the low-key highlights of the season, like signing-wise, for any MLS team, not just for Charlotte. But it kind of says something to about the like talent level when these two guys, in all respect due to them, are like at or among the very, very best performers for Charlotte this year. They haven't got enough about out of the Polish winger DP that they signed, Jozwiak. They have had moments from Swiderski, you know, really creative midfield, like attacking midfield wise, just hasn't worked for them. So they got an offseason where they got to revamp, they got to reload a little bit and see who works, who doesn't, and who they can go out and get. All right, we're letting Goss go, but he'll be back for the Victor Wanyama interview. It doesn't make any sense. It's the way taping timing goes, everybody. But just know he's leaving for a good reason. That's to go talk to Gianluca Busio for MLS Today. Next week, again, go subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts or listen at 11 a.m. Eastern on Twitter Spaces. Let's talk national TV, Charlie. We sort of poo-pooed, went past Austin LAFC, but that is a hell of a game. 8 p.m. Eastern, ESPN, Friday night. You cannot miss MLS on Friday night. Clear the schedule. Buy whatever, you know, whatever snacks you like. Hit that takeout. You know, get something in the crock pot. That probably ages me, makes me sound old, but whatever. ESPN doubleheader starting at 8 p.m. Eastern, Austin FC. LAFC, as always, there's a ton to talk about with LAFC because transfers just keep flying. Brian Rodriguez to Club America is official. Word out there is that it's 6 million plus a 20% sell on, Charlie. What do you think? Is this a good move for LAFC? It is not. It is a loss on transfer
fee. It is a loss.
But it's probably a gain as far as their team goes.
It's a good move for LAFC considering they weren't getting the production they had hoped they'd get from Brian Rodriguez. And just, he seemed unsettled. He wanted to go. If you have a player who wants to leave, then you got to make the most of it. And I think LAFC and John Thorington in particular did a good job of recouping everything that they could.
The thing I would say, and people have been complaining a lot about LAFC and be like, well, where do these DP spots come from? How do they have the TAM? What about international spots? So obviously that's all going through the league office. Obviously it's all above board. Otherwise they wouldn't be able to do it. They just took I think it was 11.5 million initial reported transfer fee, Charlie. If that's the case, and look, there is a 20% sell on, it's possible that he works his way back into a big place in the national team. You know, he's an Uruguay international. He's thriving for Club America. He's still young. He could be sold on, you know, Serie A, La Liga. He could go and have a big career in Europe. There could be sell on coming to them. But when people complain about what LAFC is doing, I just also want to point them to the fact that they were willing to, their ownership, to eat a significant loss on this one. And not just eat the significant loss, but also turn around and go invest big money outside that in Denise Bouanga and others. Like, they are, the ambition is what I just keep pointing to and saying, we need as many clubs in the league in whatever form they want to do it. You know, they may have different sort of, you know, emphases within their organization, whether it be their academy or different areas of the world that they scout or the kinds of players that they bring in, young or in their prime, etc. Like, this is ambition personified. The willingness to lose money, first of all, to spend a ton of money on a big prospect, convince them to come. It didn't work out. It has worked out with others, Diego Rossi being one, Cifuentes being another that you see right now, Diego Palacios, and to say, you know what, we got to cut our losses. He doesn't want to be here. We're not going to hold on to him just because we spent 11.5. We're going to sell this dude at a loss, accept that, and turn around and go spend more money trying to make our team better. People have been complaining about LAFC. To me, that's jealousy. To me, we need all 29 and counting, 29 includes St. Louis, teams in this league to emulate this sort of ambition and this willingness to do what it takes to invest what's needed, to have a coherent plan as to how to get that done under the cap and otherwise. And when I say otherwise, I mean within your academy and your recruitment and everything else, because not everything is about just that salary number, to be the best possible team that you can be. And now maybe they bring in Christian Teo. You know, it just doesn't stop for them. It shouldn't stop for anybody. Big game. Austin at home against LAFC. This game has goals in it. Austin is pretty open. You know, there are moments that you can get at them, and we know what LAFC can do. I'm curious to see who will be available for LAFC, how much of Gareth Bale we might see, how much of Chiellini we might see, but they don't need those two guys. We know that, and they're trying to bounce back off a loss to San Jose. Back on the road again for them as they chase the Shield and the number one overall spot in the playoffs, which probably matters more because that's home field advantage throughout. Atlanta, D.C. is another national TV game, Sunday, 4 p.m. Eastern, Univision, TUDN, and Twitter. A couple of reports here. One from Stephen Goff at the Washington Post. Christian Benteke's visa situation continues to play out. D.C. United are hopeful of a Friday or Saturday arrival and a possible MLS debut on Sunday in Atlanta. I mean, that's a pretty quick turnaround. That's like Zlatan-esque, arrive and get on the field. So that's a big storyline to watch for D.C. who need any positivity that they can get. And then Pablo Maurer reporting with Sam Stachel. D.C. are within striking distance of sending academy product Moses Nyman to the Belgian second division side, SK Beveren. Transfer fee would be involved in the neighborhood of 350K with sell-on, should Beveren move him along. David Blitzer, who owns RSL, also owns Beveren. So that's an interesting note there. This game, though, is sort of Atlanta United trying to stay alive and D.C. trying to play for pride after they failed in that regard. The other national TV game this week in Orlando City, New York City FC, Sunday, 7:30 p.m. Eastern, FS1 Fox Deportes. I believe you and I will be on MLS After Dark immediately at the end of this one. But I want to talk Open Cup Final, which we're absolutely gutted to report that we will not be at. Charlie had a whole itinerary at Disney World set up for us. He's a noted Disney aficionado. But Orlando has sold out that Open Cup Final, Charlie. So they're chasing the playoffs and they're trying to get a trophy. But you said earlier in the show that you don't think they're going to make the playoffs. Can you explain your skepticism of Orlando City?
Yes, I just think they're too inconsistent in the attacking half. So when you don't have a striker who you can depend on game in, game out, I just felt like watching Orlando City, they were missing that attacking flair that they had at times.
Is it striker or is it chance creation?
It's because
I actually think Erkin Cara, that's fair. He's maybe
it's
not
both.
In the upper echelon, but they had something with Pato sort of playing as that 10 and Pereira behind him. And Miguel Gallardo, again, on Power Rankings, I hate to just keep pushing you to it, but it's a really fun show. Doyle and I talk to people all around the league. Gallardo made the point that they had found something with Pereira more deeper line because it allowed them to link the attack to the back line.
I agree.
And then with Pato in that space underneath, because he could both be a...
Is Pato a 10?
He's not, but he could be a creator and a goal scorer in that spot, and they needed both. And then Pato has surgery, he's out, and now that's off the table once again for them.
I think Pato is a 9, or he's a second striker. I do not think he's a 10. Now, I think he had to play there because they didn't have a 10, and they needed to get somebody else on the pitch. So he was the best player to make that transition. So I think for Orlando, the silver spoon, if you will, is winning U.S. Open Cup to guarantee yourself a spot in CONCACAF Champions League for next year. And you have to figure out what the plan is next season, because I don't think, especially with their schedule, New York City FC at home, that should be an L. Seattle, who is also needs to get going, could be an L. At Philly, then Atlanta.
At Philly is not a win.
No, home at Atlanta. Oh, at Philly is a loss. Then you have TFC at home. That to me too is, but even though TFC's backline's not great. Then at New York City FC, that's an L. And then at Miami, and then home to the Crew. That is a super difficult schedule for a team that is not given confidence and hasn't been consistent. So for me, they're going to drop off considerably. They're at 36 points down. They're in fifth. I could see them in 3 weeks' time, by the time they're facing Atlanta at home, that they're out of the playoff spots.
That was a huge win for them late against Charlotte FC. Mm-hmm. It cannot be overemphasized. And at this point of the year, it's get them any way you can get them. And Oscar Pereja seems to have a way of doing that. We'll see if he can get them to the playoffs and if they can win the big one at home against Sacramento Republic in the Open Cup final. We'll have a big preview for that one that week. But one piece of news I forgot to throw in here when talking about LAFC before we get to Victor Wanyama is Mamadou Fall loaned to Villarreal, Charlie. We've been hyping this dude up for a hot second. He was going to be a U-22 player for sure. I don't know if he still can be because he's on loan. We'll have to revisit the rule book on that one. But it's a loan immediately, and it runs through June 2023. So through next summer, LAFC mm-hmm. could recall. He fell down the pecking order. You know, Eddie Segura came back. Chiellini's in the mix now. What do you make of this move for Mamadou Fall? What does this mean for him and his young career?
It's a great move because it's one that I would call an educational move.
And he's been there before, remember? He spent some time with the club. So it's not a new situation, which is good for him too.
But in terms of playing time, he's not going to play at LAFC. They're in win now mode. This is not for development. And for him to go over to Villarreal, that is development. That's working on tactics, working on technique. He is a physically imposing central defender. He could be big time because he does get up. He's incredible on set pieces. He can jump like no other. I think for him, it's just building off of the experience at Villarreal, the competition he'll face every day, getting quality coaching every day. Where they're going to focus like specifically on him and his development, I think is going to be a great move for him. So it always depends on your mentality. Are you ready for challenge? Are you looking forward to growing and learning? Because that's what this is about. And so I think it's a good spot to be in, to be amongst La Liga players.
What do you think about Georgie's move before we talk to Victor? The transfer is official, Azed. Yes.
It's a fantastic step.
Like $6 million-ish.
Yeah. You didn't want to see another player go from MLS to Chelsea or to a top club that's playing in Champions League. You wanted a player to make a jump that he would be expected to contribute right away. And especially the league favors attacking players. He's going to have space. He's going to be isolated 1v1. That's where you want to be. And in Haaland in particular, it's all about the 4-3-3. It's all about attacking and creating space, isolation, tactics. I'm all about this move.
I think it's a great move for him. You know, you talk about, hey, that move to Chelsea, and we've sort of seen the lone army. You know, I think you throw out like an Eric Palmer Brown, Man City. You throw out, obviously, Matt Miazga, who we now see come back to MLS. The Netherlands is going to be a place where Georgie can thrive, and that is a good thing for his career and sets him up for a bigger move down the line. Also, like, both congratulations and, like, sad trombone to the Chicago Fire. Congratulations, because they get 10%. Of this transfer fee, so they're probably going to get in the region of like 500k in GAM. They can convert it to GAM, so that's pretty cool for them. Like that worked out well, but also sad trombone because it took Georgie leaving his hometown club within MLS to go somewhere and thrive. Now they got the original transfer fee, obviously, from Montreal, and that's been spent on the roster. But there's a little bit of sad trombone here for the Fire, as well as just rewards for that sell-on fee that they got as well. All right, let's talk to Victor Wanyama. It's an AT&T 5G call to the field. To Montreal we go. Victor Wanyama hanging out with us today. Victor, happy to have you on Extra Time. Welcome, man.
Thank you, man.
So I want to start, actually, before we get to present day and this team and all the aspirations that you guys have, what a wonderful 2022 it has been. You signed with Montreal on March 3rd, 2020, and I cannot imagine a more difficult time to sign with a new team to change countries than you would have had at that time. Can you take us all the way back to your decision to come to MLS and what those first, I mean, I say weeks, but it's more like months, maybe even a year were like for you in Montreal?
Yeah, it was an awkward one. You know, like I had some few interested clubs in Europe, and it was tough. Like we were still like pushing hard to leave, but it was hard with the negotiation with my former club, and until the last day when they closed the windows, they made it difficult for me. And when I wanted to really move and enjoy football again, because at that period I had a few injuries and I was trying to come back, and I needed to like just get somewhere and play some football. So MLS was still open, and Thierry called me and he asked me if I could come and join the club. And I say, why not, you know, because I heard what his ambitions were. And I said, okay, I'll come and be part of it. And when I arrived also was crazy. I arrived like, I arrived like this, and after a month, we were in pandemic, so it was crazy time.
What was that life like you in pandemic, in Montreal? Do you have people around you? Was it just you alone? Like
were you
I remember
in a hotel?
Stuck in our apartment. I mean, it's just such
It was tough because I was still in a hotel. I was still in a hotel, and I was like, now that like this is crazy. I've just arrived here, and now like we have to stay home, and in hotel, I need to find something. Like in my head, it was like I need to find something like really quick, because in hotel also you meet a lot of people and you never know as well. So I need to get a place. So I had like just like I think 2 days to find something. So I found something and I moved out after 2 days, and it was like one of the worst experience. But yeah, you know, I had family to speak and friends over the FaceTime and on Skype. But, so they kept me busy a little bit.
But Victor, talk to me about Titi. Thierry Henry calls you. He says, hey, I want you to come play for the club. You're going to be a leader, obviously, on this young club. I need you to be the heart and soul of the midfield. How different is he than Wilfred Nancy? Because it seems like You come over, you have this expectation, I'm going to be learning from Thierry Henry, and he's going to help me and this club win. And all of a sudden, Wilfred Nancy comes in. But Nancy has got you guys playing incredibly well right now. What's the transition been like from Henry to Nancy? And you know, when you got that initial call from Henry, what was going through your mind?
With Andre, I think was we was we didn't do the full we didn't get the full I can say like transition because he was trying to get us like playing his way as well and training his way, and we didn't do it fully because at some point then he left. But with the coach now, Wilfred, we started like in preseason, and players kind of understood like so quick the philosophy, the style of play. And it was a lot of videos as well, not only like on the pitch, but a lot of videos. And that way we had a style of play, and we were ready to go there and you know, have a way of play and enjoy it as well.
Is that what makes Wilfred Nancy so good? The details, the way he explains it, because you know, it's been so quick, the success. What makes him a great coach?
Well, I think it's the detail, and always like you know, he likes to rectify if there is something wrong. He likes to rectify like on the video after the game, and also like he's just hands on. Like if he sees something that he can make the team improve, he does it like really quick. So always like players knows like the demanding, what he demands, and people just see him like that, but he's very demanding as well. He's a hard coach, and I think that keeps us also on our toes, and you know, everyone is able to perform well.
I saw you smile a little bit when you said he's a hard coach. So you had a little grin.
If you're from outside, you can see like he's very polite, but he's very demanding, and he's very, of course, outside football, he's a very nice guy, and he's like humanity side is really good because he will help you outside football with the family and with anything you need, and also on the pitch he expects you to do what he wants, and he expects you to be professional. So when it comes to the pitch, it's also tough.
Also, all business. Describe for people out there that maybe don't completely understand how Montreal plays. How do you see it from your point of view? What makes this team successful? What are sort of the basic tenets of what you guys are trying to do?
It's just like, you know, trying to play from the back, and also try to press the opponent, try to play the high line and press the opponent up the pitch, you know, win the ball. Immediately you lose it, like win it back as quick as we can. And also, you know, we enjoy like, you know, keeping the possession and trying to break the teams down. And, you know, when you keep possession, you break the teams down mentally, and it can be easier for you to get goals from that.
You are literally 5 points with a game in hand from the top of the Eastern Conference from Philadelphia. What is the difference between last year's Montreal to this year? And you're just your role. It seems like you found a good groove. You understand the league. You understand the tendencies of your teammates. What's the difference? How are you guys hitting on all cylinders right now?
I think I can say the difference is like now players understands the players, they understand like the philosophy more, and they are more freely. And compared to last season was a little bit unsure. Like we didn't know, some players didn't know like, oh, okay, this is what we have to do, or this is what we have to, this is my role, this is what I have to do. But now they understand it more, and they are like, they have been given the freedom to do whatever they want on the pitch. And also, I think last season we were unlucky. This season everything is going well, and you know, we are able to get the points that we had to get. Last season we were like sometimes play well and we don't get anything out of the game. So this season is quite different.
One of the big steps has been Georgi Mihailovic. Just the start of the year, from the first kick of the first game, it feels like a new player. What have you seen from his development what's changed and how does he sort of affect the game for you guys?
Yeah, you know, we know Georgie is a great player. He started really well for us before he gets slowed down by the injuries. And he's a creator, you know. He's a player that if you give him freedom, you know, to move freely, he's going to create a lot of chances. He's going to also get himself in a better places to score. So his movement is very intelligent. His movements, they're really good. And also being getting like that freedom to move wherever he wants to move makes him even more dangerous.
You don't and give him that freedom in training, good. Right?
Sorry?
You don't give him that freedom in training, though.
Iron sharpens iron, Charlie. Like these are diamonds scratching each
in
other.
Training,
right?
Yeah. In training, also he's a hard guy as well. He got me 2 days ago.
Oh, okay.
And I was so happy about it. I say, okay, I want you to start doing that in the games now because you do that only on me in training, but in the game you have to do it again in the game. So he's a nice guy, you know. That's the part of his game, like he has improved a lot, you know, like pressing and like being aggressive, he has improved a lot from last season, and you know he's get himself to a complete player for me.
You know a little something about climbing the ladder in Europe. You sort of like moved up and up and up in your career, and now Georgie is going to take that step and go to AZ Alkmaar in the Netherlands at the end of this season. And it's good news, obviously, for Montreal that you hold on to him through the end, and maybe he can help you get to the ultimate goal. How do you think he'll adapt to that step in his career? Do you think he'll have success there?
For me, that was the best move. Like, it was a smart move, you know. You need to build, you know. You don't need to, like, go up and then after, when you're up there, you don't have enough game time and then you can only come down, you know. For me, he's get himself a great move. And from there, I think he will kill it in just for me. I give him like a season to figure things out, another season to fly. So within those 2 years, we see Georgie in bigger leagues again. We see him in Premier League, or we see him in the Bundesliga big team, or Spain in the big team. So he has that, you know, he has that talent, and you know, whoever made that decision for him to go pass to Holland, he was a smart move, you know. And I think he will do well there, and he has a lot, you know, he will have a lot to learn there because the league is very good.
Let's talk about a guy who plays next to you as well, who's getting, you know, this is the sort of the where MLS is in the world sphere at this point. Our young players are in demand, and Ismael Kone seems to be in demand as well. He's gotten to the Canadian national team. He has taken a huge step this season as far as his development. Playing next to him, what do you think about him as a player and how he's grown since your time in Montreal?
Yeah, he has grown. You know, he has grown really, really fast. He's done well. He understood now also the things that the manager wants him to do. And for me, it's not a coincidence. Like he's been one of the hottest prospects in MLS, and everyone in Europe is coming, is watching him, and they want him to to get his signature, because he's a guy that, you know, he needed time, and he needed, you know, a bit of time to know, like, how to play like a mature guy, and now he's done that. Now he's really matured. He has really matured. He's playing his football like he has 10 years experience or something. So you could see like how he plays in the league now. He understands everything and he knows what to do. So for me, he's also not going to stay here for long.
He needed to play next to Victor Wanyama, right?
That's the goal.
It's not a coincidence, right? Victor, you come into the club and now all of a sudden these young midfielders, everybody wants them.
You need to make, you know, I say to him always, you know, we need to make each other better. And I talk to him a lot. I tell him, you know, what to do according to my experience, you know, what I experience and what he can change and what he has to do more. And he knows that. So For me, he's a really big player. He's already featured in the Canada national team. And for me, yeah, if he continues like this, he's going to have a bright future.
That's what's up. I'm curious, now that you've seen the league, you've been in and out of different stadiums, which team in the Eastern Conference do you feel gives you the toughest test, the toughest challenge? Which players come to mind that you say, man, when we got to play against this group or this one particular player, he gives us a difficult time?
Well, who would I say? Eastern, I think,
he's going to say no one.
No, I can't say no one. I think
they would say Victor, right? No.
I think in the Eastern, the teams that they are awkward teams, you know. There is Philly, there is Nashville was in our group at some point in last season. But I would say Atlanta.
Atlanta?
Yeah.
Atlanta. Well, you don't have to worry about them anymore.
Yeah, but you know, I don't understand like how they don't get the results. But against us, they have done well. I know we've drawn away and we beat them at home, but they are the toughest team to play against. You know, like they know how we play, they understand how we play, and they always try to get the.
Is there a player though? Is there one player that you're like, this guy's good?
They have a lot of dangerous players. They have like what's the boy's name?
Almada, probably a little Almada with you, probably Araujo a little bit as well.
Araujo as well, and also they have Martinez. So they really have killer instinct player. Like, you know, if you give them a little space, they can kill you. So that's what they make them dangerous. You know, they need just a small space to finish you. But this season, I think things have not gone their way, and they have been struggling a bit, but they have some great players.
It has gone your way, though. You guys are sitting second in the Eastern Conference right now. What is the conversation in the team about the goal for this season, the stated goals, and sort of what you can accomplish?
Yeah, I think we want to, like, you know, be humble. You know, we are doing well, yes, but we don't want to be ahead of ourselves. We just want to take game by game and make sure we can be in the playoff, because, you know, MLS again, you know, it's crazy. And
it is crazy.
We just need to be in the playoff first. So first of all, secure the playoff spot, and then we'll try and compete to see where we can finish. If it's going to be top four or top three, it's going to be great.
Last one for you, and we'll let you go, Victor. You know, I was looking at your career, and I think other than Southampton, Montreal are now the team you've played the second most games for overall. You've been here for a while now. What are sort of your impressions of MLS as a league, as a competition? And is this a place that you want to stay long term? I know the start was a little bit bumpy because the world was crazy, but it seems like you've sort of really settled into your role and your place within the club.
Yeah, first of all, when I arrived, I didn't understand the league very well. It was a bit difficult. But now, you know, the league, to be honest, has improved a lot. You see, like, younger players going to Europe, you know, doing well here and then going to Europe. You see some of the European, like, big guns coming also here. And they're still so young. You see, like, now, every team, you know, having investing in young players, and these young players, they have brought something also into the league, and then they made the league better. So I've seen the league growing since I've been here. So it's not a ping pong anymore. You know, like before when I arrived, some teams they were only ping pong. You know, like hit and rush, and you know. Body, but now
call him out.
I like the ping pong. I'm gonna start calling it ping pong. Yeah,
no, and now,
call him out.
Now they are playing more, you know, trying to build up and pressing more. It's really good. It's really good.
And how do you see your future? Is this a place you want to be long term?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great league, and you know, I'm happy now. I understand the league. I'd like to play for the longest time here in this league, and
You're still a young guy. You're still a young guy.
Yeah, I'm still. I hope I can play for a long time here. That's why I'm saying so. Hopefully, we stay here for long because you know the league is still growing and it can be even much better.
All right, don't get ahead of yourselves. Say Victor Wanyama about the impact. Or excuse me, the impact. I'm still saying that all these years later. CF Montreal. They're going to make the playoffs. We'll see what they can do. But Victor, thank you so much for your time, man. We appreciate you.
Thanks, guys. It's been a pleasure.
Hey, all the best. Keep going. Let's go.
Cheers, guys. See you.
Oh, boy, Charlie. It's just never going to end for me. Every time I see or think Montreal, my brain just immediately says impact. I can't break it. I probably will never be able to break it. And I accept that as my my past, current, and future reality. And I almost got to the end of that interview without doing it. And there I was, looking at the words behind Victor Wanyama's head. CF Montreal, and it just came out. Oh well. All right, mailbag time. We'll do it real quick. Minnesota United Houston Dynamo is also on Univision Tudian and Twitter this weekend, Saturday, 3:30 p.m. Eastern. Have a couple questions here about the Dynamo, who we haven't talked about in a while because honestly, they're not playoff relevant, and their form has been super poor. Ryan Lefebvre says, "How are y'all feeling about Pablo Nakamura with his first year as a head coach? What do you think, Charlie, about the first year of Paulo Nakamura?"
The jury's still out. This is not he needs to go. This is not that type of thing. But I would say you would not tell me that he is the man for the future yet. So I think it's still a work in progress. Next year was always going to be the year. I think that's always the second year is always when you can tell if the guy is the right man for the job in terms of, okay, have we progressed from last year? Because last year is a lot of tinkering, figuring out things. You're trying guys in different spots. You're trying to see who you could build around, who's good in the locker room. There's all those things.
And they were hamstrung on the roster too. They were hamstrung on the roster.
And I knew that you were getting an incredible player in Hector Herrera. That's not going to change this club right now. That was not a piece that was going to always put you into the playoff spot. That just wasn't happening. What I will say is the back line needs to improve at a minimum. That similar to Galaxy, the goalkeeping in the back line have been issues for Houston this year. So that's going to need to really improve for them to take a huge step forward next year.
Yeah. I just don't think you looked at their roster, you compared it to the Western Conference. They don't have the depth of the talent across the board to compete at the same level as the elite teams that are playoff competitive now. And that's a job that falls to, I don't even think, you know, to Paulo. He can't control that. He can only control sort of the way he has this team play, his team selection, the tactics, the environment within the locker room.
How motivated the team is.
But Pat Onstad, and Pat knows it, and he also knows it was going to take time, that this was not a project that he was going to walk into and just have carte blanche. Just come in and be able to tear down and remake everything, the length of contracts, the slots they were taking up. Those were issues for the Dynamo that they weren't going to be able to solve in two transfer windows. But they have new ownership that's ambitious, that's making improvements. You're seeing improvements at the stadium. You're seeing investment in terms of Ache. But they need more talent. They need more talent. And I think everybody around the club knows that. And I think you're 100% correct that this year is a feeling out year. Like, to expect more was to be unrealistic. You know, whether it be a guy like, you know, your best attacking player is Darwin Quintero. And he's a very good player in MLS. But that isn't a like long-term future deal. You go look around the league at some of these other guys that teams are building around. Like, there's a long-term future to that. There's an elite level that comes associated with that in every game contribution. And it's not just that guy. They are surrounded by players that can impact the game at a high level. If you look at the Houston Dynamo, how many of those players do they have? I think getting Karaskia long-term was absolutely big for them. Sebastian Ferreira has been okay. But again, I can't really blame him for – he's going to hit double digits, but I can't really blame him. You know, it's not like he's surrounded by just like a chance creation machine. The back line, you're right, has been inconsistent at best. you know, the reason why they haven't been winning games in the last five here is, you know, they haven't won a game against anybody but Chicago and San Jose since Nashville way back, like 15-16 games ago. As they don't stop people and they don't create enough chances to be able to afford that. So yeah, it's not a great mix for 2022, but really it's about 2023 and beyond. So I know that's tough to hear for Dynamo fans, but you've been living in that reality for a while, and that's okay. Had to hit the reset button, and there's still some resets that need to be done and a lot of roster surgery that needs to be done as well. All right, that's it for us. Big thanks to Victor Wanyama for joining us. Monday, Goss, Doyle, and Kalen will be here to break down week 27. I will be in Chicago with Anders. We're having a chat with Greg Berhalter, and we'll have that on the channel very, very soon. So have a great weekend, everybody. We'll see you then. Charlie, big thanks to you. Thanks to Dave as well. Go subscribe to MLS Today. Adios.